Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Echo page. Echo membership will provide you with unlimited access to other educational material, as well as a huge number of other advantages. Please check this out at www.echo-ibd.eu.
Hello everyone. Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Echo page. My name is Mark Ferrante. I'm an IBD specialist at the University Hospitals of Leuven in Belgium, and I'm currently the chair of the clinical committee of ECHO. It's a great pleasure today to give you some data on the use of ustekinumab in Crohn's disease. There is clearly a role for a molecule like ustekinumab because, as you know, many patients do not respond to the other treatments like anti-TNF agents or vedolizumab. Or if they do respond, after a while, there might be some problems of loss of response. So we should be happy that ustekinumab has become available. It's quite striking to see that the way that ustekinumab was developed or was put into the interest focus, it was completely different as for other molecules. It was indeed the genome-wide association studies who showed that there was a hotspot at the IL-23 locus being one of the susceptibility regions for IBD. And indeed, in my studies, it was suggested that an anti-IL-23 could have a potential role as an anti-inflammatory marker. So ustekinumab is a molecule which is directed against P40, and P40 is a subunit of both IL-12 and IL-23. So it's directed against two interleukins, interleukin-12 and interleukin-23. And this molecule is on the market already for several years for psoriasis and for psoriatic arthritis. And as you know, it became recently also available for the use in patients with Crohn's disease. So the registration of ustekinumab was based on the pivotal UNITY trials. There were two trials. In UNITY 1, patients were included if they had previous failure of anti-TNF. While the UNITY 2 population consisted of patients who had previously only failed conventional therapy, so they were not allowed in UNITY 2 when they previously had failed anti-TNF. Patients in both UNITY 1 and UNITY 2 were randomized either to receive one single infusion of placebo, one single infusion of a fixed dose of 130 mg of ustekinumab, or weight-based dose of roughly 6 milligrams per kilogram body weight. So then after 6 weeks, the primary endpoint was evaluated, which was clinical response at that time point, and clinical response was defined as a drop in CDI with at least 100 points. So if you look at the outcome data, it's clear that for both ustekinumab doses, the outcome clinical response was more often present at week 6 in patients treated with ustekinumab compared to placebo. However, as is also seen for other molecules, the outcome data were somewhat worse in patients who had previously failed an anti-TNF agent. But nevertheless, also there we could see a benefit of treatment with ustekinumab. Important to mention is also that the mode of action or the fastness of action is also not that bad. Already after 3 weeks of ustekinumab treatment, you could see a segregation in the number of patients with a clinical response compared to patients who were treated with placebo. This is talking about clinical endpoints. Of course, nowadays we want to achieve more. The main target nowadays is mucosal healing. Unfortunately, there we have to say that for ustekinumab, we don't have a lot of data available yet because in the UNITY program, endoscopic evaluation was not one of the secondary endpoints. It's only in a subgroup of patients that this was evaluated. And the results there might seem to be somewhat less ideal, with, for example, mucosal healing in only 9% of the patients. But again, this is only after 6 weeks, and we know that in Crohn's disease, you most likely need much longer time to be able to evaluate an endoscopic improvement. So after induction, responders were allowed to be included in a maintenance arm. For that, Patients who responded at week 6 could either receive maintenance dosing with placebo or maintenance dosing with 90 milligrams of ustekinumab subcutaneously, and this either every 8 or every 12 weeks. And these patients were then follow-up until week 44. At week 44, clinical remission was evaluated, and again, clinical remission rates were clearly better in those patients treated with ustekinumab, and probably even better in patients treated with ustekinumab every 8 compared to ustekinumab every 12 weeks. With anti-TNF, we know that there is a clear role for measuring serum levels, so-called therapeutic drug monitoring. It's not clear yet whether this is also the case for a molecule like ustekinumab, but if you look to the patients who had clinical remission on the long term, these were most often patients who also had higher exposure to the drug, so better levels of ustekinumab. So there might be a role for TDM with ustekinumab as well, but the exact cutoff points to try to achieve is not clear yet. Also regarding endoscopy on the longer term, so at week 44, there was a sub-study evaluating, for example, mucosal healing, and we could see that only 22% of the patients treated with ustekinumab every 8 weeks achieved mucosal healing after 6 months. Safety with new molecules is, of course, also an important issue. There are not many safety data available yet with ustekinumab, but in the pivotal trials I just mentioned, no new signals were seen. And we are lucky that we can also compare or can refer to the PSOLA registry, which was a registry in patients with psoriasis, where there is much more experience with ustekinumab. And if you look in those in these data, you see that there is no safety signal whatsoever. If you look, for example, to serious infections or other serious adverse events, and certainly not if you compare it with, for example, the anti-TNF data. Of course, the dosing regimen for ustekinumab is completely different in psoriasis than in Crohn's disease. So we do need more data on the long-term in Crohn's disease as well. So how do you have to use ustekinumab practically? Of course, this will mainly depend on your local regulation and reimbursement. But based on the data that I just mentioned to you, I think ustekinumab can be used as a first as well as a second or third line molecule in your treatment algorithm. And probably there might be an interest in patients with concomitant psoriasis or patients who developed anti-TNF-induced psoriasiform lesions. I would suggest that you give a weight-based IV induction dose of ustekinumab, so roughly 6 mg per kilogram body weight. And then I would go for 90 milligrams subcutaneously every 8 weeks and not for every 12 weeks. And the reason is that we have the impression in clinical practice that we most likely are underdosing our patients. Indeed, in a Canadian retrospective study, it was shown that several patients even have to go to 4 weekly administration of ustekinumab. Of course, this was in a study group where initially patients had not received IV induction but sub-Q induction. In Leuven, we also evaluated the first 86 patients who were treated with ustekinumab. Most of them were refractory to both anti-TNF and vedolizumab. All of them received the IV induction and then 8 weekly administration of ustekinumab, but the data on the long term were not that good. For example, if you look at mucosal healing, only 7% of the patients achieved mucosal healing after 24 weeks. Of course, we have to mention that this was a very refractory patient population, but still we think we should be able to do better with ustekinumab. For example, if you follow calprotectin levels, you see after the IV induction a clear drop in fecal calprotectin level in all patients, but then some patients will lose this response and calprotectin starts elevating again from the moment that you switch to your maintenance dosing of 90 milligrams every 8 weeks, suggesting that we are indeed underdosing patients during maintenance therapy. So with this, I would like to come to an end. I think based on the UNITY data, there is clearly a place for ustekinumab in our treatment algorithm, but there are many questions unanswered. For example, dosing regimen during maintenance therapy, We clearly need more data on endoscopic endpoints and on other long-term efficacy analysis, like, for example, are we able to lower surgical rates under ustekinumab. With this, it's a great pleasure again that you are willing to follow this podcast, and I invite you to follow other podcasts. All the e-learning content is available on the website of ECHO, www.echo-ibd.eu. Thank you.